Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Scipio Alliance by M.D. Cooper. Narrated by Chris Dukart. Seeing Her Off. Stellar Date, August 6th, 8948. Adjusted Years. Location, Intrepid Space Force Academy. Region, Orbiting Troy, New Canaan System. Joe strode through the corridors of the ISFA, nodding to students, all of whom stopped to salute him as he passed them by. This year, the ISF Academy would see its highest enrollment ever, with 50,000 human and 10,000 AI students. The idea terrified him. It was not the number of attendees that caused him such grave concern. It was the percentage of the colony's population that was now in the military. There were only 6 million humans and 100,000 AIs in the New Canaan system. In the grand scheme of things, the star system was all but unpopulated. Yet all told, nearly a quarter of the people were now serving, and another quarter were actively involved in the war effort. And everyone who had stepped foot on an ISF ship or put on a uniform had, with rare exception, passed through his academy, either here or at Victoria. He had been their commandant, which meant he was ultimately responsible for putting them in harm's way. Joe ran a hand through his hair as he walked into the Richards atrium, homage that Tanis hated, pausing to stare out through the overhead dome into space and the planet Troy beyond. He knew it wasn't really all his fault. The enemy, and there were many of those, shared the bulk of the blame. But that didn't change how he felt whenever he saw a student's name on an MIA-KIA list or etched into the base of a memorial. Joe squared his shoulders and pushed the melancholy thoughts from his mind. He knew his mood was as much a function of Tanis leaving as anything else. More than at any other time, he felt like he may never see her again. Enough, Joe, enough. He turned his thoughts back to the academy, now situated in its new facility, the Palisades. The station had been in construction for several years before the recent attack on New Canaan. Afterward, Tanis had authorized the rapid completion of the station using Picotech. 4 months later, they were all moved in. With the additional resources flowing in from the Transcend, the station had been made larger than originally planned. It was now an 11-ringed toroid with a mean diameter of 30 kilometers. Altogether, it contained over 25,000 square kilometers of living, training, and teaching space, ample room for the academy to grow. The ISFA was Joe's pride, and his sorrow, that New Canaan should have to become so military-focused, that they would be the ones to supply so many of the ships, shields, engineers, and soldiers for the war effort, saddened him. Despite his misgivings, he agreed with Tanis's logic. A strong Transcend commanded by an ally such as Sarah was vastly preferred to any other option. And so the ISFA would train the men, women, and AIs who would fill the fleets and take the fight to the enemy. He returned his attention to the dome, marveling once again at its complete transparency, unmarred by visible seams or supports. It was a single piece of carbon, fused together in a manufacturing process that rendered it both incredibly strong and flexible enough to withstand the blast of a fusion bomb. Beyond lay the myriad stars of the M25 cluster, hundreds of them, shining brightly, filled with people and resources. Already the federal legislature was considering the establishment of trade agreements with several nearby systems. Initially, Joe had opposed the idea. It ran counter to the long-term plan to move the New Canaan system, secreting it away from prying eyes. However, President Andrews had proposed the creation of a base at Noland, a red dwarf 10 light-years away. It was entirely uninhabited and would be New Canaan's public trade hub. The idea had gained traction, and Tanis had approved the plan before she left. He pulled his gaze away from the stars above and continued moving toward the administrative wing of the academy. A group of first-year recruits rushed by, eager to get to their first class of the day. Their enthusiasm brought back memories of the ISFA's early days on High Victoria, back when they operated out of a docking bay and several decks of the station, squeaking classrooms in wherever they could. Since then, over 200,000 students had passed through boot or earned their commissions at the academy, many doing both. No one donned the ISF uniform in service without first donning it at the academy. That unifying training process was what made the ISF, in his experienced opinion, one of the finest fighting forces in the galaxy. If only its supply of recruits were not so small and so precious. Unbidden, Joe thought of his three daughters, all somewhere on the Palisades, all training to go into combat, possibly together, given their unique skill set, before leaving to fight in the war. Joe was determined when they graduated to pass off the mantle of the ISFA to another and leave as well. There was no way he'd remain behind while his entire family was off fighting in the war. As he entered the administrative wing, Joe resisted the urge to check on his daughters. Not that he needed to. After the many stern admonishments they'd received before enrollment, he knew they'd be in light attack craft space-to-surface strategies and tactics 101. LACS, L-A-C-S, as the students often called it. Where the two S's and the final T had disappeared to was a running joke among the instructors. "Good morning, Commandant," the officer standing behind the admin wing's front desk said in greeting as she delivered a sharp salute.
"Morning, Major Delma,"
Joe replied, returning the salute. Joe liked Delma. She had her finger on the pulse of the entire academy. She knew who was coming, who was going, what the lunch special was, what classes had moved due to an HVAC issue. Everything. The fact that she was an AI certainly helped. But even so, she was exceedingly proficient at her job, especially considering that she manned the front desk and personally greeted everyone who passed by.
"Commandant Evans!"
A voice called out from behind him. Joe turned to see Colonel Nelson of the Marine Training Division approaching.
"Good morning, Colonel,"
Joe said as the officer neared.
"What can I do for you?"
"I have my latest class undertaking a capture and control exercise in a Tresilliad's cruiser at 0600 tomorrow. I was curious if you'd like to observe."
Joe checked his schedule and saw that he had a meeting with the recruitment team at 0700. He weighed his options and decided he could attend the meeting remotely.
"I'd be delighted, Colonel Nelson. What sort of opposition will they be facing?"
"The crew of Jove's Fury has volunteered to give him what for, sir. A platoon of Marines from the 184th will be aboard as well."
Joe nodded appreciatively.
"You're not messing around. I'd very much like to see that. What's your anticipated outcome?"
Colonel Nelson chuckled.
"Oh, I expect my class to lose, sir. But they'll give him their best and be itching for a rematch."
"I look forward to seeing what they can do,"
Joe replied.
"Jove's Fury has an exceptional crew, and the 184th are no slouches either. I bet your class is a little apprehensive."
"They're studying everything that every member of the crew and company have ever done. I think they're gonna miss the forest for the trees, but we'll see. You never know. They may just pull it off."
"We'll see how it goes. I'll meet you aboard the observation pinnace at 0530 then."
"Thank you, sir."
Joe nodded.
"Colonel?"
One benefit to having tens of thousands of hulls drifting throughout the New Canaan system was that they had no end of ships upon which to perform exercises and drills. Academy students also got to perform clearing exercises on derelicts, war games on real ships, and even live fire exercises against AI-controlled enemy vessels. All in a day's work at the ISFA. Joe had seven more conversations with various officers on the way to his office on the outer rim of the uppermost ring on the Palisades. Though his patience began to fray, he handled all of them with more grace and calm than he felt. When he reached his office, a dozen more tasks and messages hung above his desk, highlighted with different colors to denote urgency. He ignored them all, walked to the window behind his desk, and stared out into the endless night of space. Out beyond Roma, in orbit of the dwarf planet Normandy, was the jump gate. He took command of the station's sensor grid and aimed optical scopes at the gate, overlaying the view on the window of his office. The events he was seeing had transpired a few minutes previously, given the light lag, but he pretended they hadn't. The scopes locked onto their target, the eye too, its sleek, deadly form drifting toward the massive jump gate. The ring had a circumference of over 62 kilometers, one of the largest ever made. Over twice the circumference of the ore hauler's ring at the Grey Wolf Star, or so he was told. She was on that ship. His wife, Tanis. He knew she'd be on the bridge, stoic, thinking of all the tasks and duties that lay ahead of her, the alliances, the first places she would strike at the enemy. He also knew that she would be thinking of what she left behind, and the time and space that would pass between them all. Will she still be the same when she returns? Will she and Angela have drifted closer to one another? They're still merging more and more. He could often see Angela in Tanis's eyes and hear Tanis and Angela's thoughts. Every day he wondered when the end of his time with her would come. A nagging feeling warned that it already had. The display on his window caught his attention, and Joe watched as the ring's negative energy emitters came to life. They began to focus energy onto a single point, tearing a hole in the very fabric of the universe, before directing that energy at the I-2. When that focal point touched the mirror at the front of the I-2, the ship seemed to waver for a moment, and then was gone.
Be safe, Tanis and Angela. Give 'em hell.
Earth. Stellar date, April 27th, 8948. Adjusted years. Location, Hegemony Capital Buildings, Raleigh. Region, High Terra, Sol System, Hegemony of Worlds. 3 months prior. Today, not even the view of Earth could calm her. Uriel, president of the Hegemony of Worlds, felt impotent, powerless, and uncertain of her next move. A few short years ago, she had believed herself to be at the pinnacle, leader of the most powerful human empire in existence. But she now knew that was not the case. Not only had other federations and alliances within the inner stars grown in strength, but she now also knew that their rapid increase was fueled by outside forces. The Transcend Interstellar Alliance and the Orion Freedom Alliance, such innocuous names for the two most powerful political entities in the galaxy. When General Garza had come to her a decade ago and offered Orion's help, Uriel had seen it as a way to break out of the cage that the Hegemony was trapped in. For though they were strong, the Hegemony of Worlds sat at the center of the human sphere, and though she did grow the Hegemony, every system she brought into the Federation had already been inhabited for millennia. It made growing the Hegemony's power grueling work. Uriel's job was one of careful negotiation, trading pawns with 1,000 opponents in the hopes of achieving a smattering of checkmates. When Garza came along, his trade had seemed more than worth the price he had asked. Unlimited resources and advanced technology were up for grabs, and all she had to do was build fleets and use them to expand her power base and attack New Canaan. 20,000 ships gone. It felt like Balaam's world all over again, though at least there the Hegemony had managed to take control of the system. Gaining Balaam's world had been a thin silver lining around an otherwise terrible disaster. From what she had learned the previous day, there was no silver lining around the defeat at New Canaan. 20,000 ships. She had spent no small amount of political capital on that venture. First, on the construction of the ships, and second, on keeping the construction and dispatch of the fleet a secret. But the Legates, who supported her, had expected a technological windfall in reward for their silence. Instead, they had 10 million deaths on their hands. They were going to demand her head. Uriel looked out over the city of Raleigh, stretching for hundreds of kilometers in every direction across the orbital ring's surface. It was the jewel of the Hegemony, the oldest human city in existence. Her gaze fell upon the Capitol complex, where the Legates were in session, both those who supported her and those who did not. Very soon, Legate Boris would take the floor and reveal her failures to all. Uriel took a deep breath and sent the order. Do it. She waited, tapping her forefinger on her thigh. A minute later, the Capitol complex exploded. The flash of light was so bright that the windows in her office darkened. 15 seconds later, the shockwave hit, gently vibrating her tall tower. Uriel did not look away as the fireball reached toward the sky, stretching into an oblong shape from the ring's Coriolis effect. The Hegemony would reel, and Uriel would point to Scipio and their allies. She would propose new shipyards and fleets, and she would launch her attacks,
pushing back the hegemony's borders. But first, she would supplicate herself before the Transcend and seek its president's forgiveness, before she killed that adversary as well. Cardine. Stellar date, August 6th, 8948. Adjusted years. Location, ISSI-2. Region, Cardine System. Transcend Interstellar Alliance. After the successful jump to the Cardine system, Tanis and Sarah retreated to the bridge officer's lounge for a light lunch, something to sate them before spending the afternoon reviewing personnel assignments. "I've been thinking about it, Sarah," Tanis said around a mouthful of her Cobb salad. "Cardine is a fantastic forward base of operations for the military, but a poor choice for a capital." "What makes you say that?" Sarah asked from across the table. "It's centrally located on the arms of the Transcend. It's almost entirely inaccessible. It's close to the major inner stars empires." Tanis cocked her head as she examined her friend, the president of the Transcend Interstellar Alliance, or at least a part of it. Sarah had spent much of her life in the Hand, one of the Transcend's clandestine agencies. The few years she hadn't been in the Hand, she had been focused on hunting down stolen technology in the inner stars. Without a doubt, Sarah was an excellent strategic and tactical thinker. What she wasn't considering was that she was facing a battle for the hearts and minds of her people, as much as for territory and resources. "And what of perception?" Tanis asked. "Your people will look upon Cardine as a hideaway." Sarah pursed her lips as she considered Tanis's words, while Tanis summoned a holoprojection over the table to view the stellar cluster in which Cardine lay. On the I-2's charts, it was known as NGC 3532, or the Wishing Well Cluster. In the Transcend, it was called Erotus, due to its resemblance to a person standing with one arm outstretched, at least when viewed from the corward side. As far as open star clusters went, it was small, only containing 293 stars, many of them being large, old red giants. After Betelgeuse died in a brilliant supernova a few thousand years ago, the effects of which were still washing across the inner stars, no human colonization efforts had moved in the direction of the cluster. No one wanted to be close to another stellar death like that one. No expansion, that is, except for the Transcends. "So, here's Cardine." Tanis pointed at the small red dwarf nestled deep within Erotus. Rimward of it, a dozen red and blue giant stars lay between Cardine and the bulk of humanity. Tanis drew a line along a corridor that led through the stars, stopping several times to change course as it wove around the giant stars in the cluster. "And the Dark Layer FTL corridor is here." "Yes," Sarah said as she sipped her coffee. "Like I said, very defensible. The only way in is through that corridor, which we can protect with ease, or by jump gate. And you've already ordered Admiral Crissy to set up jump interdictors." "I agree, it is a fantastic fortress in space, something that is exceedingly rare. Even if an enemy wants to come at us sublight, they'll have to spend decades doing it. With the interstellar medium suffused with plasma and hydrogen, it'll be hard to hide while they do it, too." Sarah's lips twisted as she looked at the holoprojection. "I sense a but." "It's the perception of the thing," Tanis said. "It looks like you're hiding. The capital should be in some center of commerce, like out in the Vela Cluster. We've already received word from the regional governors that they will support you over Eartha. Pick a system in that cluster. We'll go to it after Scipio and ensure that it's well protected. We can select one of our most trusted admirals to oversee its defense." Sarah laughed. "Trusted admirals? I don't know that we have too many of those." "There's always Crissy," Tanis replied. "From what we know, both from your sources and from Sabrina, she stood up to the Grey Division at the Grey Wolf Star. That was a gutsy move, one that got her stuck there for a decade afterward." Sarah leaned back in her chair, cradling her coffee cup in her hands. Tanis let her mull the idea over as she skewered the egg from her salad and popped it into her mouth. She savored the fresh taste of the egg. One thing was certain. Humans could travel amongst the stars for thousands of years, build and do just about anything. But they rarely did it without chickens.
plus cats and dogs and mice and a whole host of other animals. But chickens were near the top of the list, which was good news for Tanis's Cobb salad.
"Think she'd take it?" Sarah asked. "The position, that is."
Tanis shrugged. Phineas may know better. She is his daughter.
"From her communications, I get the distinct impression that Chrissy wants to be stationed at Cardine."
Sarah mused. "Of course, so does Greer. He's mentioned his interest to me," Tanis said with a slow nod. "He certainly has significant running a base in the middle of nowhere experience."
"So does Chrissy," Sarah countered. "Both of them have inner stars experience as well. Maybe we should send them into a cage match.
Two shall enter, but only one shall emerge."
Tanis snorted.
"Your administration should be very interesting."
"What was I thinking, Tanis?" Sarah paused and looked around the nearly empty room. "Phineas should take the position. He has all the connections. He's liked, respected. I'm the bad egg in the family."
"You should probably stop asking him to take the reins."
Tanis gave a soft chuckle as she gestured across the lounge at Phineas, who was eating his small feast alone.
"He won't even sit with us anymore."
Sarah looked over her shoulder at her uncle and sighed. "I suppose I should ease up."
"Phineas," Tanis called out to the ancient terraformer over the link. "Come sit with us. We need to talk with you." "No, thank you very much. Sarah's used up our allotment of take control requests for the day. No, the week. Maybe even this century."
"It's not about that. It's about the suitability of Cardine for a long-term capital, and about which general should be in charge." Tanis said.
"Fine,"
Phineas said to both of them.
"But I'm warning you, niece mine, if you bring up anything remotely close to me running this mess, I'm dumping my meatloaf on you."
"I promise, Uncle," Sarah replied.
"Good. Now, why don't you come help me move my food over there?"
Tanis looked down at her salad and Sarah's sandwich, then over to Phineas's four plates and two drinks.
"We'll come over to you."
When they'd settled, which mostly involved rearranging Phineas's plates to make room for theirs, he looked at Tanis, then Sarah.
"So, what's this about Cardine? I like it. Didn't build a place myself, but it's well done. Unassuming red dwarf star, one terraformed world. They managed to spin it up, too. And a couple of Jovians to sweep up the bits and pieces and keep everything in order. Tritium rich, too. Good for antimatter generation. There's even a neutron star nearby. I'm itching to try to build one of those neutron beams our friends at Star City used."
"Ease up. We know you like the place, but you don't want to be in charge of anything, so it doesn't matter if you like it."
"Tanis Richards," Phineas said, holding a hand over his chest. "You cut me to the quick. I just don't want to be in charge of people. They get in the way of building stuff. Like my latest scheme, a portable jump gate."
"We already have portable jump gates," Sarah reminded him.
"You misunderstand,"
Phineas replied.
"A portable jump gate for the I-2.
Tanis let out a low whistle.
"You just barely managed to make a stationary one, and it's only been a day since its first use. You're already improving on it?" "You spent hundreds of years with Ernest Redding. Did he not operate in the same fashion?"
Tanis laughed.
"Good point. He usually had to stop himself from improving his creations, if only so he could roll out an initial version that he would then tinker with. Although, going the final distance usually bored him, and he'd already be on to something else. His labs are filled with thousands of near-complete inventions."
Phineas rubbed his hands together.
"You have no idea, my dear. I'm like a kid in a candy store in there. No, I'm like a kid who can't get fat or die of diabetes in all the candy stores in the universe at once. I'm Quantum Candy Store Kid."
"About the jump gate," Sarah prompted with a wink.
"Yeah, right. Well, I ultimately want to work out a way to take the jump gate with us as we use it. But for now, I'm working out a way to be able to build a new gate within days, deploy it, use it, and have it self-destruct, if we so desire."
"That sounds useful. Really useful," Tanis mused.
When it came to jump gates, the I-2's size made for a distinct disadvantage. As of this moment, there was only one gate in the galaxy that the I-2 could fit through, and it was at New Canaan, a system that was currently over 2,000 light-years away, or 4 years via Dark Layer FTL, give or take a bit. Components were already being sent to Cardine to build a second gate, which was more than necessary to avoid the 2-year FTL journey to Scipio, but once they arrived at Scipio, the I-2 would be facing a long journey back to the Transcend. Granted, the I-2 currently housed a dozen smaller gates that could send other ships back to the Transcend, or anywhere else, so no one other than the ship itself and Bob would be stuck in the inner stars. Tanis had considered not taking the I-2 to Scipio at all. The Aegis would be a far less imposing ship to fly into the Scipian capital system, but Tanis was uncomfortable with the idea of leaving the I-2 behind. "You're just going to miss Bob," Angela said privately. Tanis laughed within her mind. "I will, yes, his counsel is invaluable. Not to mention how much I missed being on this ship. The house on Carthage feels like a vacation spot. This is home." "You also have an irrational phobia of being separated from the I-2 and getting stuck in the inner stars." "Irrational? Seems entirely rational to me," Tanis replied. "You have a lot of resources at your disposal, and people would come looking for us. We tend to make a splash, it wouldn't be hard to find us." Tanis smiled at Angela as they stood forehead to forehead in the shared space of their mind. "Good point, Ange. We do stomp around a lot." Outside her mind, in the much smaller reality adjacent to Tanis's physical body, Phineas was explaining how he could couple the component pieces for an I-2-sized jump gate together, and how he could probably build one in a month with the facilities on this ship, so long as they had an ample supply of pre-tempered reflectors. Sarah nodded appreciatively. "That certainly opens up options. Makes me feel a lot better about us jumping into the inner stars." "I'm with you on that," Tanis replied. "Anyway, what we wanted to talk about is that Cardine is great for a centralized location servicing the military. What it doesn't do is make the people of the Transcend feel good about their new president. She needs to be visible." Phineas lifted a forkful of meatloaf to his mouth and chewed thoughtfully before answering.
"I suppose that makes sense. You two should have thought of it before we all flew out here."
"We had to come here anyway," Tanis replied. "Chrissy and her fleet are waiting for us. We need to organize this as the Inner Stars Front's central command, and then Sarah has to come to Scipio. Petra, her agent there, has made it very clear that the Scipian Empress won't deal with any flunkies, which would be me." Phineas raised an eyebrow.
"If only all leaders could have flunkies like you. So, where do you suggest for the capital of the Transcend?"
"I was thinking somewhere in Vela," Tanis replied. "It's in the Orion Arm and is resource-rich. The cluster's still defensible, and it's far enough away from Eartha that we can clearly establish it as a base of power." Phineas nodded and then spoke around a mouthful of carrots.
"Vela is good. The data I have says that Olma is still the chancellor there. She would also function well as a secretary of state, what with Adrian heading off to Eartha and joining her and your doppelganger."
Sarah shuddered. "Gah, don't remind me. She changed me. Other me wears clothes and stuff. What do you think she is, anyway, a clone of some sort? I don't have any mental imprints on file. Eartha couldn't really make me." "Sarah," Tanis said, reaching out and grasping Sarah's hand. "Helen was in your head for decades. Yes, Eartha could very well have recreated you, in your entirety. For all intents and purposes, the other you is also you." Sarah ran a hand through her hair. "I really, really hate that. Like, more than I can even express. It feels like the ultimate violation. Can you imagine a parent saying, 'You didn't really work out, so I'm just gonna make a copy of you and tweak it to my liking.'"
"I'm pretty sure that happens all the time,"
Tanis replied. "Well, it sucks. Sucks balls," Sarah said. Phineas laughed.
At least we'll be able to tell you two apart. Come, Serene Sarah is obviously evil Sarah.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?